The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello and welcome along to Tuesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Another busy midweek schedule as the campaign barrels on into the final few weeks. On today's show, we'll be hopping between the big time of the Champions League and the slightly more straightforward Premier League action. In part one, we take in the big one at the Etihad tonight. Manchester City welcome 13 times, yes, 13 times European champions Real Madrid to Manchester. City fans will be not so delighted to hear that thanks to some injury and suspension situations, Pep Guardiola has some big selection calls to make. And it's a big Champions League game. We all know what that means when Pep has a decision to make. So we're going to be digging into that in just a second. In part two, we flick ourselves back to the day job of the Premier League. Leeds United's 0-0 draw at Crystal Palace last night means they are still right in the mix to be relegated. And then to complete the pod, we have the latest on the new man at Old Trafford. Erik ten Hag is reportedly very keen to get the ball rolling and he wants to set up Zoom meetings with every member of the United first team squad as he looks to get a handle on things at United. So plenty to come on today's show. My name's Fergal Brennan and joining me, we have the only person more powerful than Elon Musk on Twitter, for now at least. It is Mr. Social Media himself, Marley Anderson. Marley, are you worried that Musk is after you?
I'd just love to have 1% of his wealth in the bank and also be 1% as absolutely mental as he is, to be fair. He's an absolute character, that fella. Christ, I can never understand, you know, when you hear like made-up news, like you don't know, like nothing's made up when it comes to Elon Musk. It's just like he's an absolute crazy bloke, but yeah, crazy rich as well. So yeah, I'd love to have a little portion of his wealth one day.
Yeah, and he looks like he is going to be taking over Twitter. That's a bit of breaking, bit of non-football breaking news, but a big, big piece of news in the world of social media. Alongside Marley, we've got Joel Tudor. Now, Erik ten Hag is lining up these Zooms. Joel, you've had your share of Zooms in the last 12 months. Any tips for Harry Maguire? Make sure, you know, you're dressed from the waist up, webcam on, that kind of thing.
Yeah, just make sure he can find his webcam because he can't seem to find much on the pitch at the moment. But yeah, I've had my Zoom call with him. I know what's going on in the back room, so my sources will tell all in the future.
Very good. The inside track on Ten Hag United. We're going to get to Ten Hag and his Zoom calls in a few minutes when we get on to part three of the show. But, Marley, we're going to start with Man City against Real Madrid tonight. This is a real humdinger. We're, you know, getting to the business end of the season. Champions League semi-finals, Premier League title running. And it's crunch time again for Manchester City. Losing to Chelsea in last season's final. First time they've reached the Champions League final. And despite the fact that they've got it tough, or at least demanding, in the Premier League, Liverpool are pushing them all the way. Pep has said a number of times that they know if they drop any points, Liverpool are going to pounce in the title race. In a strange way, does that actually benefit them? We're going to talk about the injury situation in just a second, but the momentum that they've got, they're just winning game after game after game after game. They got through Atletico. That was a big test of every aspect of Guardiola and his squad. Real Madrid are fantastic. They're on the verge of wrapping up the La Liga title themselves. They've got this record as the team in the Champions League. But City are ready.
They are, yeah. I think, like, sort of thinking about the sort of approach to the game, it's kind of, it's probably the first time in 3 or 4 weeks that Man City head into a game not absolutely needing to win it. Because they've got the second leg to come, so it might just bring the best out of Man City. To be fair, we'll have to wait and see tonight. But the whole situation of, like, at the weekend, you know, you're playing before Liverpool play, and you've got to beat Watford. Like, I know there's not much pressure on beating Watford because they're absolutely terrible, and Man City are absolutely flying. But the week before, you know, when it was Brighton and Liverpool had already played, that was like, there was pressure on that. It was getting a little bit nervy. They got the goal with Mahrez and it broke the seal, type of thing, and sort of took the shackles off. And I think with Real Madrid tonight, you know, it's one of those where you you can be like, you know what, we don't need to win this game, so let's just relax a little bit and let's just, you know, play our normal game, as they have been doing, even when they are under pressure, and see what happens.
The situation that Man City find themselves in, Joel, is obviously a positive one. They're leading the way in the Premier League. They are still strongly fancied. Just looking at the odds here, they are still favourites to win the Champions League, despite playing Madrid tonight and then going to Madrid next week. This is an interesting point that Carlo Ancelotti made and Marley has just made. The game doesn't, or the tie doesn't necessarily have to be won tonight. Ancelotti pretty much said they're going to have to be patient across the first and the second leg. And that was a lesson that Man City learnt against Atletico. You don't have to win every minute of the 180 that you play. Atletico Madrid were only really interested in playing 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes of the second leg. And that's the way to do it in the Champions League. Pep will want to go out and he'll want to win this game. But when it is a two-leg game and there is no away goals to factor in, it becomes a very different situation as to previous seasons.
Well, judging from the way in which Real Madrid played against Chelsea in that second leg at the Bernabeu, then the first leg definitely doesn't need to be won, because that second leg, they got massively lucky. They were a different team compared to that first one, where they played ridiculously well. And then in the second leg, it just seemed as though the whole defence capitulated. And when you compare, obviously, Chelsea and City now, City are absolutely levels above Chelsea in terms of quality. So for Madrid, I would worry on both legs. I feel like Madrid are the team who need to get the victory here tonight, just purely because I still feel as though the defence has massive frailties. It's not the same defence that we're used to. They used to have, you know, Varane and Ramos and Carvajal and a prime Marcelo. Now, I don't really trust David Alaba too much at centre-back. Sometimes they play Militao. I'm not massively won over from him. Obviously, now they've got Rudiger, so it kind of shows their thinking in the defensive department. But I would favour City tonight, just purely on the basis that the fact that Madrid have also got their league pretty much wrapped up now. Maybe it'll fall in their favour, because between now and next week during the home leg in Madrid, they'll be able to rest, you know, the likes of Modric or Cruz or basically all of the main players, Benzema if they really need to, whereas City is still going to have to go full throttle in the league in the next week to make sure that they keep pace out of Liverpool's favour. So it's going to be I think it'll be a very closely contested game again tonight, similar to the way in which the Atletico Madrid game was a few weeks ago at City. But it's going to be a very different tie. Obviously, Atletico were a team who just completely low blocked and tried to counter, whereas Madrid have got enough quality as well to do exactly what City do. So it's going to be an interesting tie. But I just believe that City have got way too much quality. But then again, in Champions League knockout ties, Guardiola is known to be like, I just remember that one against Lyon where they went out to them. And just ties like that where they should have had them wrapped up, it just seems as though he approaches them in a different way, with a different mindset. So it will be an interesting tie, but I do firmly think that City will take the upper hand tonight.
Marley, Joel is right in terms of sometimes perceptions of Pep Guardiola in these big Champions League games is the overthink, quote, overthink. And he has been a good boy this season and well behaved in terms of his lineups and picking players and putting them in positions where they should be. But Man City fans have been stung by this before. Ahead of a big, big game, just when they think that Guardiola is going to stick to the script, he tears it up and he throws it out of the window. And he did kind of hint in his press conference yesterday. He said, we need to find creative solutions to our injury problems, particularly in defence, and players must be prepared to play in positions where they're not completely used to. Now, if you're looking for a hint, that's it, that he's going to do something wacky and wild. He was asked a bit tongue-in-cheek about Gabriel Jesus and would he play it right back, and he said no. But João Cancelo is banned. He's not going to play, so Alexander Zinchenko is going to start. And there's big injury doubts over Kyle Walker and John Stones. The likelihood is that John Stones probably will make it, but Kyle Walker, according to sources this morning, probably is going to miss out. So City are weakened, but the fans will be praying that Guardiola doesn't do something daft.
Yeah, that's always going to be the worry, isn't it? You know, and it's probably a little bit, I was going to say a little bit harsh, but it's also understandable why City fans are a little bit sort of fearful of what might happen. Yeah, and also it's like it's not an unreal fear. Like he's, you know, I think 2 years ago it was Leon. Last year it was the double pivot in the final with Fernandinho and Rodri playing, and no one understood that because it was the first time this season, or that season, sorry, that they'd started together. It's usually one or the other, obviously, but with the sort of problems they've got, I think it's all just like. It's almost like you know, the scars of the past, like threatening to open up. But this would be the first time he's enforced into a change sort of thing. Because you know, in the final last year, he didn't need to play two defensive midfielders, but chose to. And the year before, I think he chose three at the back in France against Lyon, or can't remember which leg it was actually. Well, one of them, he started three at the back, and it was something which no one had ever seen before. So. Tonight's different because he has actually got a problem. So I can maybe see like Zinchenko at the back. You've got Diaz and Laporte in the middle because Stones is injured, but Diaz came back a little bit the weekend. I can maybe either see Nathan Ake playing at right back if he's fit, but I think he's got an injury as well. So I can maybe see Fernandinho filling in at right back, which I think he's done a couple of times before over his career, but it's a tall ask because Vinicius Jr. is arguably, you know, Real Madrid's most dangerous player in terms of who's going to run at you and who's going to cause problems and get them up the pitch. So it's a big problem, to be fair, that he's got to fix. But that's why he gets paid the big bucks. And as I said before, you know, you've got the second leg as well. You probably assume, you know, Walker's back and Cancelo's back from suspension in the second leg. So maybe if you can just, you know, keep it tight in the first leg and not concede an away goal and not be too gung-ho attacking. You know, City will back themselves to beat any team, you know, or in the world, anywhere really. So Real Madrid at the Bernabeu in Champions League semi-final, they won't be as fearful as that might sound.
Before we take a break, Joel, call this for us. Manchester City at home to Real Madrid. Not being disingenuous to Real Madrid, but you do know what you're going to get. Their lineup pretty much picks itself. They're strolling to the La Liga title. That will probably be confirmed this weekend. So they will be nailed on champions before the second leg. Huge amount of experience, huge amount of big game experience. We saw that against PSG and Chelsea to fight back. How's this going to go down tonight?
Do you think that City will take the upper hand tonight? I'm calling it a 2-1 victory for City just because I'm just going off the basis of that Chelsea game. I know they've been in very good form in La Liga recently and they're going to have the league wrapped up. Also, they managed to rest a couple of players like Luka Modric, who's just absolutely pivotal in that midfield. But I think City are just levels above them this season, especially at home as well. City are very rarely beaten at home, and I think they'll definitely take an advantage to Madrid. But then Madrid is Madrid. They've won it 13 times for a reason, and I definitely wouldn't count them out of the tie. I'm not saying that they're going to be absolutely battered, but I definitely think in the first leg, City should have the upper hand, I would say.
Marley, go on, give it to us. How's it going to go down?
I think City will dominate the game. I think they'll win, to be fair, but there's always a chance. I was just looking at the betting odds, and I mean Real Madrid are 5-1 to beat Man City, who've got what, like, probably the second choice defence if everyone's fit, you know, second choice player in half of the positions in the back four, maybe three if you would choose Stones over Laporte. So I can see Real Madrid coming up with something, but not enough. Like I think they'll score, but I think City will get it done, maybe 2-3-1, and give themselves a decent little advantage going into the second leg where they're probably going to be stronger again.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm going to agree with that. I'm going to go 2-1 to City in this one, but I do think it all comes down to that second leg in Madrid, because Real Madrid are arguably the only team in Europe that, even when they're behind, if they've got the second leg at home, they just won't panic because they've been there, done it, Modric, Benzema, etc. These guys have got so much experience. But yeah, I think City will nick it tonight, so we'll go 3-3 for Man City to win the first leg. Right, we're going to call it a day. We're not going to call it a day. We're going to give ourselves a little break. We're not calling it a day. It's way too early on the Football Social Daily. After the break, it is the Premier League. Crystal Palace 0, Leeds United 0 last night. Big game down the bottom for Jesse March. Leeds are still in the shake-up to get relegated. Crystal Palace edging towards safety, but We're going to be discussing what this means for the relegation picture and are Leeds in big, big trouble. All that to come in just a sec.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Tuesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. We're switching from Champions League action to the day job of the Premier League. Marley, Crystal Palace last night, Leeds travelling down to London on the back of a big, long break. This is a bit of a strange one because there's been a few glitches in the Premier League calendar in recent weeks, and somehow Leeds have managed to get themselves a 16-day break. But they didn't use it very well because they travelled down to Selhurst Park, barely left a mark on Patrick Vieira's side, got themselves two shots on target, but never really troubled Crystal Palace. A point on the board in the battle to get themselves away from relegation danger. But we're going to talk about their run-in in just a second. They're still right in the mix. Jesse March has brought some positivity back to Elland Road. Marcelo Bielsa leaving. He's come in. There is a bit of a freshness and a bit of zip about them. But they still can't get the results together to get themselves away from the drop zone. And on the balance of it, they were probably lucky to get a point in London last night.
Yeah, they probably were. I thought Crystal Palace were the better side fairly comfortably, but I think both teams have the same problem, but just to a different extent. I think Palace's weakest area is scoring goals. As well as Mateta's done at times this season, I don't think he's the 12 to 15 goal striker you need to push you up the table. Like, they're playing better football, no one can deny that, as to what they did last season under Hodgson and the two or three seasons before as well. But, you know, they've got the flair, they just need that killer instinct, that finishing ability to propel them up the league, because they were toothless last night. And, you know, as much as they sort of had control of the game and it was theirs to win, like, I didn't really have much confidence that they were gonna do it, unless, you know, somebody won a penalty or something like that, and it was a pretty much a clear cut easy chance to score. But having said that, Leeds weren't much good either. I thought they sort of were happy with the point. It was another game where they had to start Daniel James as a striker and, you know, put a sort of square peg in a round hole. But that's where Leeds' seasons fell apart. You know, they haven't had a striker for, you know, probably 30 of those 34 or 35 games, whatever they've played now. So it's really affecting them, because without that killer instinct for both sides, but especially for Leeds, you know, you can barely move forward. And, you know, I think Leeds had two shots on target last night and none of them even made the highlights package that you can see on YouTube. That's how poor and just ineffective they were. So it's a problem, really, because I'm not convinced Leeds have massively improved since Jesse Marsh has come in. I think they've got a good couple of results to put 5 points between them. But, you know, if you look at how Leeds are playing and how Burnley are playing at the minute, you know, that gap could easily fall away. And neither team has got neither team around Burnley, sorry, like Everton or Leeds have got an easy run in. So I'm not sure it's entirely cut and dried, this whole relegation race. I think Leeds need another win from somewhere. But yeah, they just need to score goals from somewhere.
Joel, as Marley said, Leeds under March have been good, but maybe not great. 11 points from 7 games since he took charge. But of those 3 wins they've picked up, one was against Norwich and one was against Watford, who you would expect or assume are probably already relegated. So it's difficult to gauge exactly the progress that they've made. And this gap, we're kind of joking that they've had a mid-season holiday, but so much of what Jesse March is about is coaching the players, contact time with the players, getting his ideas across. You've just had 15 days of solid training. You've got Calvin Phillips back in the team, who's really, really important. Liam Cooper's back fully fit now. And this is what you produce. This is going to frustrate Leeds fans, because this was a bit of luck where they got this break when they didn't have a game. They were supposed to come back into this period refreshed, ready to fight on, not necessarily to drive all the way up into towards the European places, but get enough on the board to make sure they don't have to sweat in the final 2 weeks or so. And now that is exactly what they're going to have to do.
I guess, but I mean, Crystal Palace isn't the easiest team to play this season. There's been a lot of top four teams who've gone and played them, and Manchester City's one of them who've taken points off them. Liverpool struggled with them. Chelsea have struggled with them, where they got a last minute goal. They're a difficult side to play, especially at their ground as well. But I just think with Leeds, they've been undefeated in the last five games. So it's not like they're in poor form. It's just the fact that the teams below them, especially Burnley, now are starting to gain ground on them. But I do worry for Leeds, but I don't worry for them. But I do worry for the fans that the next fixtures are Manchester City, Arsenal and Chelsea. I mean, if they don't get anything from any of those games, and all of those teams have pretty much something to play for, especially City and Arsenal, they could find themselves completely swapping places with Burnley, especially because Everton have still got a few tough games to come as well. So it could end up being a straight battle between Leeds and Everton. It just seems as though Burnley have got so much momentum now under Michael Jackson, and it feels as though the tides are turning a little bit. And with the way in which Everton are going, you would say that they're the team most likely to pay the price just because their form is awful. Whereas at least with Leeds, they're not being beaten. They've gone five undefeated, which is decent for a team who are on the brink of being pulled into that relegation fight. But it's going to be, like I say, the next three games will tell the story of how it's going to go, because then after that, they have Brighton, which again, are not the easiest team to play. And then Brentford away, which as we've seen just recently, Tottenham couldn't breach them. They're looking in really good form at the moment. So Everton and Brentford, I feel as though it might end up being Everton and Leeds, I feel like it's going to be a straight battle between them, just because I feel as though Burnley's momentum now has just completely changed, and you have to applaud the owners with Burnley, because everyone was really slating them when it happened with Dyche, but they've nearly doubled their wins in the whole season, which is pretty miraculous.
Marley, would you agree with that the relegation picture could and probably will change in the next few weeks? Leeds now find themselves in a position, it's difficult to predict any result in a Premier League season, but Manchester City at home this weekend, Arsenal away, and then Chelsea at home. These are three teams that are possibly, probably going to be finishing in the top four this season. Leeds might now find themselves in a position where they just have to wait. They just have to wait until those final two games, Brighton at home and Brentford away on the last game, because Burnley and Everton are going to make moves in the next couple of weeks. And it's very, very feasible to say that Leeds won't get anything from City, Arsenal and Chelsea. And they might just have to take what they can get in the final couple of weeks.
Yeah, it could well come down to then, because, you know, like the sort of question here is like, can you see it changing and things like that? Like, I can see it changing, but also in the next 3 weeks, I can't really, well, at least the next 2 weeks, I can't see that bottom of the league changing much, because I expect everyone to lose those games. Because, as you mentioned there, you know, Leeds have got a tough run with Chelsea, Arsenal and Man City. And then Everton, on the other hand, have also got Chelsea, Leicester, and then Watford. So Everton's running slightly easier, but the way they're playing, I don't expect them to win any of those games. So it kind of can all change, but can also stay the exact same, because if everybody loses, it just gets a bit more twitchier, because, you know, if everyone loses the next two, you know, Everton have got four games left, and then Leeds have got three left, I think. And, you know, they'll be right on each other's backside sort of thing, because there's 2 points, 5 points between them. And if Everton win one of those games, let's say Everton beat Watford, that is 2 points between them. And then it all comes down to who can win next. And because they've got such a tough run, the pair of them, it's really hard to see how this one's going to end out, because I can see something big going down to the last day, because that relegation race is so tight. That, you know, one win can swing it massively. And Burnley have got Watford at the weekend, then they've got Villa, who are on an absolute stinking run. They've actually got Villa twice in the running, Burnley. So, you know, Watford and two games against Villa, you know, if they win both of those games, especially the home one against Villa, you know, 6 points, if you give them 6 points now in that table, it takes them, you know, way out of trouble, really. It takes them, you know, all the way up to 37 points and level with Aston Villa, for example. So, you know, it is almost looking like Leeds against Everton, and between the two, Leeds are still playing better, and you'd still back them slightly because of Everton's run. But yeah, I think this is, it's all sort of manoeuvring itself to become like one of the really, really exciting last days, where the race for fourth goes down to it, and the race for the relegation, or the race to avoid relegation, I should say, goes down to it as well.
Before we take a break, we're going to get a quick prediction off you. Probably every single podcast between now and the end of the season, we're going to be talking about predictions. But Marley, Joel, Leeds are in this fight. Looking at the table now, you'd imagine that Aston Villa are probably okay. 37 points from 32 games. So they've got a game in hand on Leeds, on Burnley and on Crystal Palace. So, Joel, as it stands, looking at the games to go, Everton do have a game in hand as well, don't forget. Who's your pick to go down?
Well, going off the current form at the moment, objectively, you have to say Everton are in the worst position, aren't they? Especially since they have Chelsea and Leicester, and then they have Arsenal on the final day, and Arsenal will have something to fight for sure. So right now, you'd have to say Everton are the least equipped and in terms of how they're playing. But I mean, judging from that game against Liverpool, they didn't produce a bad performance, so they can take some good things from that. But right now, I'd have to say Everton.
And Marley, what about yourself? Form-wise, it's not looking good for Everton, but Leeds have got some really hard games coming.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. But like Joel said, you can't see Everton going and winning a game.
Unless they play United.
Yeah, and they've blew those two chances, haven't they? So it's I think the next three for Leeds, you know, they've both got hard running, but the timing of the running, like Leeds have got, as we said before, you know, City at home, Chelsea at home, and Arsenal away. So if you say that's three defeats, for example, you know, Everton in that meantime maybe might have picked up a win because they play Watford in that third game, in the sort of, I think it's the 11th of May, they play that game. So if you say, and they've got Leicester before that, and Leicester are easier than Chelsea or City, like Leeds play. So we're to the point where no one can put a run together. No one's going to win four of the next five or three of the next four. But it can all hinge on one win. And I think Everton might just get that first win before Leeds do. And then it becomes really, really tetchy. And if Everton can follow up the Watford game with a home game against Brentford, I think the timing of the running could favour Everton. And we might get some very, very nervous times on Leeds, especially if Bamford isn't back and they're still putting square pegs in round holes with the striking situation. So I think it's tighter than people think, because Everton have shown a slight improvement, not much, but a slight improvement in the last couple of weeks, and it could go down to the wire, and I can see them just about surviving. And also, what I just realised then, Frank Lampard got bare stick from when he was Derby manager for celebrating against Leeds. Do you remember when Leeds had the, I think they got, didn't they get someone done for training on Derby's Spygate thing?
Yeah, yeah, on spying on, yeah, spying on.
Yeah, and Lampard gave it the whole, when they beat them in the league, he gave it the whole binoculars thing. How what a turnaround it would be if Leeds were the ones to relegate Lampard's Everton on the last, in the last like furlong of this race. So there's a lot of narratives basically, and I'm trying to sit on the fence as much as I can because I have no bloody idea what's going to go on. And I'm not really comfortable backing anyone to go down, because I think three or four teams have been too bad not to get relegated at various points this season. But if I had to pick one, I'd probably pick Everton to go. But I can still see them surviving. So I'm totally contradicting myself even saying it.
Switzerland.
100%. Geneva is my favourite place.
I still can't pick this. I've been saying all along that I think Burnley are going to dig themselves out of it. And even with Mike, I can't call him Michael Jackson.
No, you have to call him Michael. Nah, we've established on this podcast he is Michael Jackson. That's it.
Okay. Michael Jackson in charge of Michael Jackson's Burnley, I still think are going to be okay. And I don't really know why, but I do think Everton are going to be okay. All the logic and all the reason points to that they're not. And form-wise, they probably do deserve to go down, but I just don't see Everton playing in the Championship. And I think Leeds, as it stands, are slipping. And momentum can work in both directions. You can have positive momentum and you can have negative momentum. There's one thing that I would flag up. I was chatting to someone about this a few days ago. The structure of the games going into the final few weeks of the season is weighted against the teams down the bottom, because until the final weekend of the season, the table won't be level. There'll still be games in hand and teams playing catch up, because on Thursday the 19th of May, which is 3 days before the final game of the season, the final weekend of the season, Everton and Burnley both play. So Everton and Burnley have to play 2 games in 4 days to keep themselves in the Premier League. Everton have got Palace at home and Burnley go to Aston Villa. So if you're looking for little edges and little advantages, the the fixture calendar even is not helping either Michael Jackson or Frank Lampard. So that's just something to think about in the final few weeks of the campaign. Right, we're going to take a break from Michael Jackson, Burnley, relegation and all that type of stuff. After the break, we're talking about something completely different. We're talking about Erik ten Hag and Manchester United. In a slightly strange move, according to reports from the Daily Mirror, ten Hag wants to zoom his new players. He's not taken over at Old Trafford until June, but he wants to check in with Maguire, with Ronaldo, see what the score is, touch base, all these management terms that they're going to have to be dealing with. But it is also nice that Premier League footballers have to put up with the same things that we all do, which is the dreaded Zoom meeting with the boss. So we're going to be talking about all that in just a sec.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back to Tuesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. We've discussed Champions League and Premier League already. Manchester City going for glory in the Champions League against Real Madrid, and a bit of a damp squib in South London last night. Crystal Palace 0, Leeds United 0. So to wrap up, we're going to be doing something a bit more fun, or if you're into this type of thing, not fun, Zoom meetings. Joel, we've all had to put up with Zoom meetings over the last 12 or 18 months. Some of us, it fills us with dread. Some of us, we can get stuff off our chest to the boss. We can shout at him without fear of maybe getting the sack. And Erik ten Hag is going for the Zoom route. According to the Mirror, he wants to have a Zoom meeting with every current member of the Manchester United first team squad. Now, this can go well, this can go badly. You can have bad Wi-Fi, your webcam can break, you can pretend that the line is breaking up so you don't have to answer some awkward questions. This is a bit of an unusual stance that Ten Hag is making. We know that he wants to get started early. We know that there is a lot of problems at Manchester United. If this story is more than just nonsense, would you like to be a fly on the wall in some of those meetings?
Yeah, because from what I've seen of Ten Hag, it seems as though he's a guy who really doesn't give a crap what he says. And I wouldn't be surprised if on the spot he'd be saying to one of them, right, it's time to pack your bags because you're not going to be here next year. I don't believe that this story has much truth into it, to be honest. Like we were just mentioning prior to the podcast starting, it feels as though many people are trying to make a name for themselves based on making up a story first, and then, well, you can't really disprove it, can you? It's not like Ten Hag's going to come out and say, actually, no, I didn't ring them. Or he just doesn't want to talk about it.
You're not going to get the meeting password, so he's not going to send that to you.
Password's just like Maguire 123 or something. He's fully concentrated on Ajax. I'm sure he'll be messaging and texting a few of them, but his priority is going out with a bang with Ajax and getting another trophy, and that's all he'll be focused on. Just feels as though many reporters and fake reporters are trying to give these exclusives which have no basis on them whatsoever. But I mean, considering the fact that there's been so many leaks from that United squad, I again wouldn't be surprised if it is the case, because it seems as though every single thing coming out at the moment is just it's just like a leaky tap, isn't it? Everything that seems to be going on behind the scenes. Even we saw Paul Scholes when he said, I'm sure Jesse Lingard won't mind me saying this, but the dressing room is absolutely dire. I think he would mind him saying that, actually. I think that's one of the worst things you could have said. And I'm surprised Lingard hasn't come out and said, yeah, or he probably messaged Scholes and say, well, you know what, I'm not giving you any more information, because he's singing like a bird to everyone. But it's a really bad situation, and judging from the fact that Rangnick has hinted at the fact that he knows who the people are, or the clique, as it's been come out to say, who've been spreading these different stories, I wouldn't be surprised if the people who get moved on are those people. So I'm sure, yeah, the conversation I would love to be a fly on the wall for is the one between Erik ten Hag and Rangnick. Because I bet Rangnick is holding, well, judging from his press conferences, he doesn't hold any blows whatsoever. So imagine the conversation with Ten Hag after a nice little red wine. I'm sure it's going to be ridiculous, but yeah, there'll be a lot of change going on, and I'd love to see the conversation between them two.
One of the big stories emerging within this, Marley, from the Zoom calls, whether they do or whether they don't happen, is surrounding Harry Maguire. And apparently the subject of the captaincy will be on the table. Maguire's had his issues this season on the pitch. He's struggled for form. He's not looked like the player that we have seen previously off the pitch. Also, we know there's been these horrendous situations where there have been threats made against him. And obviously that type of behaviour is deplorable completely. But inevitably, that is going to affect your focus. You're only human. If these types of things are going on, it is going to impact your mental state going into a game. Is this something that will be on Ten Hag's list? It might not be top of the list or top of his priorities, but will it be something he's thinking about, that potentially Harry Maguire has shown the captaincy skills previously, but maybe he's not the right person for Ten Hag's United?
Potentially. Well, the one thing you would look at with Maguire is he the type of centre back that that Ten Hag would want? Has he used a centre back like Maguire before? I'm not really sure, because you know Maguire struggled a lot of times this season with with everything, to be fair, with the state of his form right now. But yeah, he's there's going to be decisions and stuff made by Ten Hag, and you know my thing with this whole interim thing was my biggest issue with it was, you know, he's got to come in the summer and then decide what he's going to do. Like, is he going to fully trust what Rangnick tells him? Because even though Rangnick's very respected and all the rest of it, you know, he's got a different personality and a different outlook on things to Ten Hag. You can't be twins in this thing. You can't think the exact same, and you can't fully trust someone's intuition, even though they're more experienced than you and stuff like that. It's hard for a manager to just go, well, you know, Ralph says he's rubbish, so I'm going to get rid of him. It seems very cold, that. So I wouldn't be surprised if something similar to these Zoom things are going on, whether it's a phone call or a WhatsApp group or a direct WhatsApp message or whatever it may be, firing up the old Bebo account or something like that. It could be anything, but I don't doubt that there'll be some sort of introduction to the players, just so it's not all like from, you know, 0 to 100 real quick in the summer when he arrives, because you know there's a lot of work to do in the summer. You know, there's Man United have got to spend a lot and got to ship out a lot of dead wood, which Ole Gunnar Solskjaer started to do when he was there and did a good job of it, in my opinion. But there's more to be done, and Ten Hag needs, as soon as he gets a grip on the squad, you know, the sooner Man United can start moving forward, because, you know, at the minute they're stagnating and going backwards. So Ten Hag needs to just get his introductions done, get the pleasantries out of the way, find out who wants to be there next season. I'd quite like to see the Zoom meeting between him and Jesse Lingard, as Lingard probably comes on the thing and he's already wearing a West Ham kit or something like that, because, you know, there's no way he's staying. But also, I wonder if he would ever get tempted into something if he was promised something by Ten Hag. But if that did happen, he needs to learn from his previous mistakes. And Jesse Lingard's probably been promised, you know, 200 or 300 appearances more than he's actually managed to get for Man United over the years. And he's 28, 29 years old now. So forget anything that may get promised to you in the near future, and get yourself away and play. But it's it's an interesting situation because Man United have put themselves in this own situation with the interim thing and then announcing Ten Hag during the season with, you know, 5 or 6 games left to go, whenever it was. And now they've got to battle the way out of it because it needs to the ground needs to be hit running very, very quickly in the summer.
Yeah, big job incoming for Erik ten Hag when he finally takes over in June. If the Zoom calls do happen, bit of advice, Harry Maguire, make sure your Wi-Fi is working. Ronaldo, get your webcam cleaned, all those type of things, you know. Good Zoom etiquette that we all have to adhere to. Right, we're going to call it a day for today's edition of the Football Social Daily. As always, Marley, Joel, thank you very much.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Great stuff indeed. As always, here on the Football Social Daily, if you hit subscribe, you can get access to a brand new episode every single day. The guys will be back tomorrow, Niall, Matt and Ian, reviewing Real Madrid against Manchester City tonight and how that plays out. And then building up tomorrow to the other Champions League semi-final, Liverpool against Villarreal. Yes, there's a huge amount going on, so don't forget to hit subscribe so you can keep right up to date. Thanks for listening and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.